Last week I was telling you, and I reflected on the story of Pinocchio. And you know what happened to Pinocchio when he was telling stories? His nose would grow and grow. But there's another phenomena in our society. And I want to share the lyrics of a song. I'm not going to sing, but I want to share the lyrics of the song and see if you remember it. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender, pretending that I'm doing well. My need is such, I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender, adrift in a world of my own. I played the game, but to my real shame, you left me to grieve all alone. Too real is this feeling of make-believe. Too real when I feel what my heart can't conceal. Oh yes, I'm the great pretender, just laughing and gay like a clown. I seem to be what I am not. You see, I'm wearing my heart like a crown, pretending that you're still around. Oh yes, I'm the great pretender, just laughing and gay like the clown. I seem to be what I'm not. You see, I'm wearing my heart like a crown. Anybody remember the Platters and that beautiful song? I'm the great pretender. Well, my question is this for all of us. Can you spot a pretender? Can you spot a poser or a person that's trying to be something they're not? That person maybe who holds a lie, high-level position or a high level of bravado, but is low on actual follow-through. They talk a good game, but they don't walk the walk, but they sure talk the talk. Well, the one who issues threats, but when confronted themselves, they hide behind their staff. A sneaky, inept, degenerate, cowardly lowlife who sounds menacing, but doesn't have it in him or her to stand face to face with their target or their problem. Who can hurl accusations and warnings, but would turn and run if confronted by the object of disdain. A loner who needs the approval of their colleagues or peers. That's the description of the fox that Jesus was talking about in our story. Who was the fox? Well, he told us it was Herod. Now, there was four provinces in that area. Herod was the governor over the Galilee in the time that Jesus walked here on this earth. And while Jesus mentions false prophets as wolves, he reserved that branding for the fox, especially for Herod. Hear what it says in Matthew 7:15. Beware, Jesus talking, beware of false prophets, which will come to you in sheep clothing, but inwardly they are a raging wolf. Now, wolves were those who disguised themselves as good people. We've heard that tale, a wolf in sheep's clothing. But we were inwardly wicked. They looked and acted much like a sheep. But their hearts were predatory. From Aesop to the early church fathers, the idea that a wolf could easily disguise as a sheep jived to the idea that they're similar in size and coloring, and the clever wolf looks and acts like a sheep, but it's a dangerous predator. The fox, however, is a different story. Because the fox can't very well disguise as a sheep. The fox is clearly and overtly a fox. And the fox must take a different measure of attack to get his prize. Usually, the chicken, a rabbit, a rodent, or any other small animals, including a pet. Now, the fox doesn't try to look or act or behave like a sheep. The fox instead pretends to be a vicious predator, but goes after the weak in a very sneaky and sly way. And when confronted, the fox runs away. The wolf, however, may be the master of disguise. Clever, stealthy. But in turn, the fox is also sneaky, sly, and seen as a scoundrel. And while the wolf is a family-oriented canine, a social animal, if you would, that lives and hunts in packs and is loyal to his own kind, the fox is a solitary hunter, untrusted even by the wolf. The wolf don't trust the fox. The fox is ultimately untamable and a loner. There's an animal trainer by the name of Casey Lee, and he said this: put a wolf, a coyote, a dog, and a fox together in a pen, and the fox would be anticipatory of them all, and they would take control. For Jesus, this describes Herod to a T. Jesus harbors great disdain from Herod, and there's without a doubt why. He's the one that killed his cousin, John the Baptist. John was a missionary, and he was also a prophet. John the Baptist. And not only did Herod have John beheaded, he did so at the bequest of his illegitimate wife. Herod took his brother's wife. That's why she was an illegitimate wife to that guy. And he was also Jewish. So Herod had to look up to John, and he liked John. He was thinking John was a pretty good person. So why did he allow then for his brutal death? Because he not only betrayed himself and his own identity, but God's covenant vision of what was going on. Now Jesus also knows that Herod is essentially a coward and weak. Because ever since Jesus began his own ministry, Herod had been cowering in superstitious fear, suspecting that Jesus may be John the Baptist who had come back to life to haunt him. Herod's great guilt just drove him crazy. But Herod likes to act powerful and threatening, and Jesus sees him as a pathetic, weak, a sneaky scoundrel, a morally bankrupt man who has no idea who he is and therefore cannot stand on his own power. Very uncharacteristic. Anger, distaste. We see Jesus in the scriptures today standing up to Herod and getting right up in his face, so to speak, and talking back to him without fear, without retaliation, provoking him, no doubt, but not expecting reprisal. Because Jesus knows who he's dealing with. In fact, later when Jesus arrested Herod, wants nothing to do with it, and immediately washed his hands and threw him off to Pilate. Pilate didn't want anything to do with it either. He also washed his hands and sent it back to the Jewish leaders. Herod is apparently indeed a mere coward, a scoundrel who wishes others to do his dirty work. Sounds familiar today. I think that's what Putin's doing, so that he can evade the responsibility. It doesn't make him less a predator, but he is a pathetic one. And he can't attack his prey face to face and open with strength of resolve. When face down, he simply slinks away. You know, like that old guy, Satan. By calling him the fox, though, Jesus says all that needs to be said about Herod of the Galilee. Meanwhile, Jesus' message is mysterious and elusive. Think what he said: in 3 days, I'm out of here. I got to get to Jerusalem so God's final plan can come to fruition. No prophet can be killed outside of Jerusalem. Jesus knew what he would be walking into, something more threatening than Herod, for Herod had no time. He had bigger fish to fry. He wasn't going to worry about this old Jesus guy. Now, we can't know whether Jesus' 3 days that he was talking about were the literal number of days he spent traveling through the Galilee, or whether he was referring to some time in the future, to the 3 days that would take before his resurrection. But we do know this. Jesus' eyes and his mind and his heart was resting on Jerusalem. Again, Luke 13, verse 34. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you killed the prophets and stoned those who were sent to you. How often have I wanted to gather your people just as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings? But you didn't want that. So it seems that no mistake, and perhaps even a little bit of comedy, turning of the pen. Jesus' metaphor for himself during this lament is a chicken, a hen, in fact, the favorite and usual prey of the fox. However, by the time Jesus gets to Jerusalem, he will become instead the Lamb of God, the sacrificial lamb who takes away the sins of the world, trying to protect her young. But the temple sacrificial lamb, the one honored, who will take upon himself the sins of all of God's people through his willing death on the cross. You see, Jesus' plan is God's plan. He's not prey, but volunteered. Not a victim, but a willing sacrifice. And while the way of the fox is cowardice, the way of the lamb is victory, praise be to God. And the true strength that comes from the sacrificial love and authenticity and truth. Within days, Jesus will stand face to face with his accusers and offer himself to be chosen for slaughter. He will not run and hide. He will not back down. He will stand before them in God's holy strength because of his power lies in who he is. His identity is Yeshua HaMashiach, the Messiah, and the Son of God. His courage lies in what he knows lying ahead. So this is the way of the Lamb. God's way. The way of truth, hope, and love. The way of courageous discipleship. And the way for early Christians who would not deny their faith in Jesus despite the threat of injury. In the early Christians, they were known as the way. Jesus told them that he was the way, the truth, and the life, that no one can come to the Father except through him. The threat of injury, the threat of torture, the threat of death, the way of people around the world still today, who would give up their life for the sake of the gospel? We're seeing it live and in color on all these videos of what's going on around the world with this war. There's people standing there, the Orthodox Church, the pastors, the preachers, people that are like Samaritan's Purse and many other people who are standing in the way of death in order to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Yeah, they're going over there helping them with food and clothing, different things, but they're sharing the gospel. Today, in this time of Lent, Tina had got us some Lenten devotional materials, and it's back there on the table. If you haven't got one, please pick one up. It's a good way to follow the Lenten season, the 40 days. You know what Lent is? Phil and I talked about this. The good thing about Lent, it reflects on the 40 days when Jesus was in the wilderness, and how he was tempted. You know, we're tempted in life and all kinds of things. So we say, okay, well, during this 40 days, we want to give up something that tempts us, and we'll do that. I use the silly analogy of chocolate, but, you know, so we give up chocolate, but then here comes Sunday, a time of grace. And you can have that piece of chocolate, and then on Monday, you go back to that sacrificial part of your life. I love the Lenten season for one reason. During Mardi Gras and some of the other things, they have, and some churches practice it. We served the church that did. They call it Fat Tuesday. I'm like, oh, what's Fat Tuesday? Well, we have pancake supper and sausage, and we pig out. And then here comes Ash Wednesday, where we start thinking about Lent. Well, today we're in the Lenten season as Jesus slowly makes his way to face his accusers and to bear the cross. My prayer is that you feel the power of Jesus' sacrificial love in your life, and that you too may follow the way, the truth, and the life of God's holy and precious Lamb.